I'd like to welcome everybody to Parshas Bo. The year is 5767. Let me reorient us to the theme of our year, which is conversations with Hashem. We're looking at each Parsha, trying to find a conversation. Sometimes the conversations are two-way, and sometimes they're one-way. And sometimes we think they're one-way, and they're really two-way. But I turned immediately to chapter 12. Chapter 12 is a conversation initiated by Hashem to Moshe and to Aharon. This is a very, very significant portion of the weekly Parsha. I'd like to recall the very first commentary of Rashi to the Chumash, to Bereshis. We've quoted it before in this class. Rashi, on the word Bereshis, Bara Elohim, in the beginning God created, or in the beginning of his creation, Rashi says, Omar Rabbi Yitzchak, said Rabbi Yitzchak. Some people say that Rabbi Yitzchak was his father, because his name is Rashi, Rab Shlomo Yitzchaki, Shlomo son of Yitzchak. Others say it's a midrash from an earlier source. Lo hayatzarich lahaschil es haTorah ella mehachodesh hazelachem. God could have or should have began the entire Torah with hachodesh hazelachem. Notice Shemos chapter 12, verse 2. This month shall be for you the beginning of the months. Rav Yitzchak said the Torah could or should have been started at Shemos chapter 12. Why? Shehi mitzvah rishona shenitztavu bo Yisrael. Because it is the first mitzvah that was commanded to the nation of Israel. The beginning of the mitzvos. And we know that the Torah is primarily a book of mitzvos. Meaning, it's not a book whose purpose is to teach us history. It is a book whose purpose is to teach us how to live our lives. And what more direct and active way of learning how to live our lives than through the mitzvos? We learn how to live our lives also by the stories of the patriarchs and matriarchs, but somehow it's much more clear and much more direct when we're given a mitzvah. And we know that our tradition has it that the Torah contains not 10 commandments, but really 613 commandments. So why not get started right away with the first mitzvah? That's what Rashi quotes Rabbi Yitzchak as asking, and then he goes to give an answer of why the book of Bereshis was so necessary, in fact. But it remains that Shemos chapter 12 is certainly an important beginning, an important starting point for the Torah. And so that's what I want to read, because I would like to hear what God has to say when he initiates the process of commandments. I believe that as soon as we start reading this chapter 12, we're hearing a different kind of conversation that we may have heard before. Now, the conversations that we have heard before are the likes of Abraham, go to Canaan. Yaakov, return back to the land of Canaan and face your brother. You know, like real life drama. Yaakov, go to Egypt and have no fear, I will protect you. Or more recently, Moshe, go to Egypt and tell the Pharaoh to let us go. You know, it's real exciting and real dramatic, and we kind of love those stories. Those are the stories we remember. So we just think of Hashem as a great storyteller. Lahavdil. But when we listen to chapter 12, what do we hear in this conversation? So let's read a little bit. Hashem said to Moshe and Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, this month shall be for you the beginning of the months. It shall be for you the first of the months of the year. Okay, very nice. We're starting a new chapter. We're turning over a new leaf. We're starting a calendar. Speak to the entire assembly of Israel, saying, on the 10th of this month, they shall take for themselves, each man, a lamb or a kid, for each father's house. Every single Jewish family shall take a goat, a lamb or a kid for the household. If the household will be too small for the lamb or the kid, then he and his neighbor who is near his house shall take according to the number of people, everyone according to what he eats, shall be counted for the lamb or kid. The lamb should be unblemished, it should be a male, it should be 1 year old, it shall be a sheep or a goat. It shall be taken on the 10th and examined until the 14th. the entire congregation of the assembly of Israel shall slaughter it in the afternoon. The blood shall be taken and placed on the doorposts and the lintels of the houses. The flesh shall be eaten on that night, roasted over the fire, and matzos with bitter herbs they shall be eaten. Okay, are we going to get back to the stories? Where's the exciting parts? You shall not eat it partially roasted or cooked in water, roasted over fire only, its head, its legs, and its innards. You shall not leave any of it until morning. Any of it that is left until morning, you shall burn in the fire. Excuse me, Hashem, can we get back to the stories? So shall you eat it, your loins girded, your shoes on your feet, your staff in your hand. You shall eat it in haste. It is a Pesach offering. Yes? Are we done yet? This day shall become a remembrance for you, and you shall celebrate it as a festival for Hashem, for your generations, as an eternal decree. For a seven-day period you shall eat matzos. On the previous day you shall nullify the leaven from your homes. Anyone who eats leavened food, that soul shall be cut off from Israel from the first day to the seventh day. On the first day shall be a holy convocation, and on the seventh day shall be a holy convocation. No work may be done except for what must be eaten for any person. Get the drift? Or additional laws, page 361. Hashem said to Moshe and to Aaron, this is the decree of the Pesach offering. No alienated person may eat from it. Every slave of a man who was bought for money, you shall circumcise him, and then he may eat. A sojourner and a hired laborer may not eat it. In one house shall it be eaten. You shall not remove any of the meat from the house to the outside. You shall not break any bones. The entire assembly shall perform it. What happened here? Everything was so fun. Everything was so exciting. And now, all you have to tell us is do this, do that. Do it now, do it then. He can do it, she can do it, he can't do it. This is how you have to do it. First slaughter, then eat, then this. Don't leave it over. My goodness. What happened here? It's a whole new kind of a conversation. And this is where the Torah should have started. It's almost as if the stories were just fluff. This is really the Torah. Person comes to study and learn about Judaism. Please tell me what it says in your Torah. Sure, come on in. Let's read Shemos chapter 12. Do this, do that, now, then, he, she. That's the Torah. That's where it all starts. So we have a very important task in front of us here. We all know that the Torah, when you get down to it, is a book filled with laws. We know that Judaism has many mitzvot, many details. There's a code of Jewish law that has the fine print, the likes of which you can't even read on a medicine bottle. We know that being a fully observant Jew is quite rigorous, quite demanding, requires much study, requires much meticulousness, clarifying questions, and all kinds of rituals. What's it all about, Moshe? This is a question I'd like to address today. I'd like to break it down into four parts. And these are the questions I'm going to try to elucidate based on some of our sources. Question number one, what is the meaning of all of these instructions that we have outlined? Question number two, why is so much action required? After all, we're not kids. You know, when you are in grade school, you're in elementary school, if you learn something, then you have a skit or a play to act it out. But, you know, they don't do that in high school and in college and in adult education classes. We don't take our lessons and then write a script of it. We just learn it, get it in our head, digest it, and finished. Number three, this is just the beginning. Why do we have so many mitzvahs? 613? My goodness. Why so many? And number four, even among the mitzvahs, we find that the concentration of mitzvos relating or commemorating the Exodus from Egypt is very high. Why the prominence of this particular set of mitzvos? And I think this is just really a basic conversation, a basic dialogue for anyone who is interested in understanding what's the idea of mitzvos anyway. So to start off with question number one, what is this meaning in the symbolism of these particular mitzvahs? So for this I call upon a wonderful source that is so popular among Jews who study to Sefer HaChinuch, the book of mitzvah education. The Sefer HaChinuch is a wonderful sefer. It was written maybe 500 years ago. The author, this is what he writes in the introduction, was concerned that his son, probably in his pre-adolescent or teenage years, should have something entertaining and constructive to do on Shabbos afternoon when he was not, I guess, at the yeshiva with his friends. And I guess they didn't play stickball or whatever. And so he wrote a treatise on every parsha of the week, all of the commandments that are contained within each one, a brief synopsis of what the mitzvah is, how it applies, some of the details, but not many, and then a section about the root purpose, or the reason, as we say, behind the mitzvah. Not that he was playing God, but that he was speculating based on sources, based on our general philosophy of Torah, that he offered very satisfying answers as to why the mitzvah is performed this way. And so that's a wonderful source. If you come across a mitzvah and you want to know, well, why do we do this? You look in the Sefer HaChinuch. That's always the first stop. So a number of themes that he mentions in connection with the observance of Pesach, of Passover, and the Paschal Lamb, and the Matzah, and the removal of chametz, of leaven, and some of the details, placing the blood on the doorposts, eating it in haste. So some of the basic themes that he brings out in these mitzvos, and there are a number, maybe close to 20 mitzvos just associated with Pesach, he does talk very much about the great transformation that occurred with the Jewish people at the event of the Exodus. That here we were for so many decades, and really more than two centuries, we were strangers, then servants, and then victims of atrocity, living a life of abject poverty and total purposelessness, feeding the ego of a human despot who thought himself to be the god of the world. Totally no redeeming grace in life at all. And then suddenly, overnight, we became transformed into the people of God. We were taken from that fiery furnace to become, in the words of the Chumash, a mamleches kohanim v'goy kadosh, a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. We were chosen to be elevated, to be cradled in the arms of the Creator of heaven and earth, and for a life destined for greatness. As such, we should celebrate, we should mark this Exodus with a feast. Every family should gather together in the company of family and friends, eating a roasted meal, and really feeling like kings and queens. Of course, we have to remember that it's by the grace of God that we got to that state, and God took us out of there in great haste, because had we not left when we left, maybe we would have been lost forever. So there is the idea of the great danger, the escape, but overall, the elation of being taken out and designated to be this kingly people. That's really our first question. Our first question is the meaning of these rituals. But to really knock the nail in, he says, but why do we have to do all these deeds? Again, why can't we just sit down and, you know, have a meeting? And Moshe Rabbeinu will get up and say, everybody, we have just been rescued from Egypt, and we have been chosen by God to be a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. And the question is, why do we have to act it out? Why the charades? Because it wasn't just for that time, it was for generations. So the Sefer HaChinuch adds the words, Mitoch ha-ma'asim v'hadimyon sh'anachnu osim, Nikva b'nafshosenu hadavar le'olam. Through the actions and through the dimyon means like the imagination that is conjured up when we go through the actions. This message that we are a holy nation, a rich, elevated nation, is nikva b'nafshosenu, is embedded in our souls, le'olam, forever. That the only way to get that message knocked in to our hearts and our souls is through the actions and through the dramatic, almost theatric activity that the mitzvos engender. That's the way to get it into our hearts and souls. maybe we could get it into our head if we were to sit down and read a book, or if we were to sit down and hear a lecture, but we wouldn't get it into our hearts and souls unless we go through the action. This is a very, very important realization that mitzvos are not just child's play. They're not child's play. They are the vehicle through which we take a message that may register to our minds, but it drives it home into our hearts and our souls. From that point, he really uses that as a springboard to go on to our third question, which is, why are there so many mitzvahs? Why are there so many mitzvahs? Because as we said, this is just one small set. We have a Pesach Seder once a year, twice a year in the diaspora. But mitzvahs are for every day of the year. Why so many mitzvahs all around? Before we get to the Sefer HaChinuch's treatment, I just want to jump to Derech Hashem, the Way of God, which is one of our favorite sources, Rabbi Luzzatto, who has served as our encyclopedia for several years now in this class, Encyclopedia of Jewish Thought and Philosophy. Everything is explained and classified and organized, universally accepted as a master of Jewish thought. And he goes into the Kabbalistic, or as we call it, the pre-Kabbalistic realm, tries to tie everything together. Everything is really part of a unified whole. And Rabbi Luzzatto says that following the thesis of the entire book, just to repeat briefly, that God created this world and created a creature, namely man, with the capacity of connecting with the divine God, but not in a simple way, as we would have thought, in a way in which man is given a choice, man is presented with two different options, good and evil. There are forces within him and outside of him that could lean in one way or the other way. And by being given the mind, the seichel, the intelligence, and the correct education, man can make those choices to connect with God, and in that way, earn the greatest pleasure and reward possible, connection with the divine through his own choices. Well, if that is the goal, the means to that goal is mitzvos. So just to read a short few lines, man serves God, which we're going to also translate as connect with God, by observing all his commandments, and the root purpose of this service is to make man always conscious of God and to turn him in God's direction. The guiding principle is that man must realize that God created him only so that he could have the opportunity to draw himself close to his Creator. And it is through these mitzvos that he will do so. Okay, we'll come back to that also, why specifically through the mitzvos. Again, restated in another way, the general goal of observances and study was explained earlier. That is, serving God is the way that man becomes directed to God and draws himself near to him and clings to him through the different mechanisms that God has ordained for doing so. That's what mitzvos are. Mitzvos are mechanisms, ways of attaching. Why are there so many? Why are there so many different ways? Because, as he says, the purpose of the divine commandments has already been discussed, namely that man should obey God's orders and fulfill his will. In doing so, he conforms to God's will in two interrelated ways. First of all, he obeys God's will in doing what he was commanded to do, and that has merit in and of itself. The fact that a person obeys God is one way that he connects with God. Secondly, however, he also perfects himself to that certain degree associated with that particular commandment. In doing so, he is conforming to God's will all the more, since God desires that man be perfected and attain the enjoyment of his good. You know, if a person was prescribed a certain number of, let's say, vitamins, so the doctor will say, or the nutritionist will say, you need to take 30 different kinds of pills a day. Why so many? Because this one provides this nutrient, this one provides that vital vitamin, this one provides the iron, this one provides the zinc, or whatever it is, and each one gives something that rounds out the person's health. Well, the same thing is true in the spiritual realm. Every mitzvah has its particular function. And if we want to connect with God, we want to connect with Him fully, with every aspect of our being, That's why there's so many mitzvos, because there's so many different ways to perfect the human being in his connection with God. So many different ways of connecting. It's a very complex system. And people are wondering, why does it have to be done specifically that way? What difference does it make if the lulav is this big, or if the sukkah has a tree over it or doesn't have a tree over it? That's like saying to the pharmacist, what difference does it make if you put that compound in it or you put that ingredient? Who cares? It's just a pill. Or who cares what numbers you press when you dial the phone number? Ever try to dial a 10-digit phone number and hit one wrong button? Instead of calling Georgia, you'll call Hawaii, right? So mitzvahs are accomplishing certain particular things inside of our souls we don't even know, because we're not the pharmacist. Hashem is the pharmacist. He knows what goes into it, but that's the purpose. The purpose is to create a connection between man and God and to perfect us. Now, that's a little bit on the Kabbalistic end of things, but to bring it down to earth, going back to the Sefer HaChinuch, Rabbi Lutzato says, why are there so many mitzvahs? Like, why can't we just talk about it? Or why can't we have Pesach and have one ritual? We'll eat matzah. Good enough. Matzah. We don't need the Pesach lamb. We don't need the bitter herbs. And then you tell me, I can't break the bone? Oy vey. What's the difference if I break the bone or don't break the bone? So he says, let me tell you a truism. That man has a mind and a heart, and he also has a body. And as we said before, he has the capacity to tend towards good or evil. He can do everything that God prescribes, or he can do nothing that God prescribes, and everything in between. What is the driving impression? What makes a man motivated to do one thing or the other? Is it his mind? Is it his heart? Or is it his actions? What's going to really determine the path on which a person goes? A lot of people say, I have a good heart. And because I have a good heart, it doesn't matter what my actions are, because I have a good heart. So he says that your heart is affected by your actions, not the other way around. The most powerful part to us is our actions. It is our actions that are ultimately going to determine our heart. You can take a person who has a great heart, great intentions, merciful, kind, compassionate, generous, but then he gets mixed up with a group of thieves, and for some reason, for some particular reason, he decides to go along with them, but of course in his heart he is not intending at all to share their evil ploys. He still has a good heart. He says, uh-uh. He starts doing what they do in action, and his heart is going to go sour. He's going to lose all those good feelings, because your actions speak louder than your thoughts and your feelings. Because we're physical, and the physicality of us is the strongest part of us. We know that. We know that it's much easier to touch and to feel that which is material, that which is concrete, than the very elusive, abstract thoughts that are constantly flitting through our minds. And therefore, says the Sefer HaChinuch, what really counts is our actions. And therefore, God had to give us many, many actions. It's almost as if God gave us a mitzvah for every single occasion. Everything. How to wake up, how to go to sleep, how to eat, how to pray, how to dress, how to walk, how to study, how to talk, how to do business. What is he micromanaging us? Yes. But why? He's giving us a good action for every possible situation. And it's our choice. If we want to connect with God through that action, we have the opportunity to do so. So that there's really never an action where we are left to our own devices. Because it may be a misplaced action that could change our good intentions. And remember, as Rabbi Lutzato reminds us, there's that evil urge, there's that evil inclination which is always lurking. And the only way we can connect with God is to do something which will be stronger than it. And there it is. God is giving us the antidote. He's giving us the alternative to following the evil and the base inclination. So mitzvos are for our benefit. Mitzvos are for our success. And without the mitzvahs, without the actions which speak louder than thoughts and words, we're going to be drawn the other way. So Hashem is not coming here to burden us with something which is meaningless and burdensome as we experience in Egypt. To the contrary, God has removed us from that, and instead He's replaced the meaningless servitude with an entire spectrum and a program of deeds and instructions, every which one can give us another connection to God and a way to perfect ourselves. That is what mitzvos are. So we've covered question number one: what is the particular meaning and symbolism behind this set of mitzvos? It is to engender within us the remembrance of the Exodus, with which God spared us and redeemed us from that living hell of total godlessness, and how He brought us to a state of kingship, of royalty, of elevation, of greatness. We address the question of why does it have to be done by act, by ritual, and not just by word or by creed, because, as Sefer HaChinuch says, because it is only through the deeds and the imagination that these themes, these ideas are embedded in our souls. We expanded that in our third question to the whole notion of mitzvos. We've seen why there are so many mitzvos, because mitzvos perfect us. They give us the opportunity to do the right connecting type of action for every situation in life. Again, because it is the deeds which are going to dictate our direction. By the way, it works in the converse. If a person has a bad heart, let's say a person feels that he doesn't believe in God, he doesn't feel like he's a good person, he thinks that he's self-centered, or he thinks that he's cruel, so he's bothered. How can I get rid of those thoughts? Should I go to the psychiatrist? Should I go to the psychologist? And I'm not saying there's not a place for therapies like that, but the Torah is giving us the antidote. The Sefer HaChinuch says, you can have a person with a terrible heart, but if he starts doing the mitzvos, because his actions are being drawn in a godly fashion, his heart and his thinking will be transformed with them. He says immediately, a person does a mitzvah, he'll be a different person. He'll suddenly be kinder. He'll be more positive about life. It's magic. Because Adam Nifal, Kafi Pe'ulosav, a person is affected according to the way his actions are. So mitzvahs are a gift. And to conclude, the final question, why, after everything is said and done, after the mitzvos will be displayed and taught to the Jewish people for 40 years from Moshe, why does the mitzvah and the experience of the Exodus from Egypt have such a central role? Why are there so many mitzvos where we say, Zecher Litzias Mitzrayim, in remembrance of the Exodus? Even when we make Kiddush on Friday night, Zecher Litzias Mitzrayim, to remember the Exodus from Egypt. When we put on the tefillin, it will remind us of the Exodus from Egypt. When we put on the tzitzis, the talis, remember that how you left Egypt. Why do we always come back to Egypt? Because Egypt is where it all got started. As the Ramban says, that's when we learned that there was a God. When we saw those plagues, even after we read the article, but we knew that these would not have happened without the divine mastery over the world by the Creator. That's where we learned that God knows what's going on with us. We learned that because we cried out to Him and He rescued us, almost immediately He responded. We found out that God converses to Moshe. We found out that there's prophecy. We found out that God can manipulate nature, and therefore He must have been the creator of it. We found out that God rewards and punishes. We found out that when you pray to God, He listens. We learned our lessons about God in Mitzrayim. We also learned in Mitzrayim the difference between a godless existence and a godly existence. That's where we saw the contrast. That's where the transformation first took place. And that gives us the motivation to do the mitzvahs in the first place. If we want a frame of reference, why should I? Why should I? Because God took us out of that and He gave us this. We trust Him because we know what He did for us. He did it only for one reason, out of His love. And that's why we should do mitzvahs. And we saw the difference between that life and this life. That's why Yetzias Mitzrayim is so central. It's where we started, and it's where we learned just how important and how purposeful and how valuable a life of mitzvahs can be. So we're always reminded to think of Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Exodus from Egypt. We have to keep it strong. We have to pass it on to our children. We have a holiday once a year where we reenact, where we relive, and each time we do that, we should strengthen within us the understanding and the motive and the resolve really to devote ourselves to these mitzvahs.